We began discussing the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek,
right.
And we mentioned that the smag has a chiddush here on the pasuk Vahoya Baniach Hashem Elokecha Lecham Mikol Eivecha Misaviv. The smag writes that mitzvah Mechias Amalek Einen Ohegas Ad Bimos HaMashiach. And the Radbaz actually quotes, not by name, but he quotes Yesh Misha Kosav. And this is the Radbaz in Perkei Milchus Molochim, She Mitzvah Ein Mitzvah Zu Noheges Ad Yimos HaMashiach. And then he writes, Uparsha Shmuel Ushaul Havit Yuvto. Right, because obviously if Shmuel is telling Shaul to go kill Amalek, he's fulfilling the Mitzvah Mechias Amalek, even though the Mashiach hasn't come yet. But the answer is that the Rambam in his Hakdama to Pirush HaMishnah Seder Zeroyim writes that there's something called Horash Shah. And when he gives an example of Horash Shah, he gives this example of Shaul going out based on Shmuel's Nevuah to fulfill this command to fight the battle against Amalek. Now, why does the Rambam say it's Horash Shah based on the Navi? Why not just say it's a mitzvah d'oraisa of hachrim tachrim? But if we assume that the Rambam is like the smag, that this mitzvah of timcha zech amalek is suspended until Yimos HaMashiach, then the Rambam has to come up with some explanation why Shmuel commands Shaul to go out and kill Amalek. There's no mitzvah killing Amalek. And the answer is, it's got to be a horash shah. So if it's a Rosh Shah, then it could be that the rules change, the rules of the game change. For example, Rashi, in his comment on Shmuel, Rashi writes that the Amalekim were Balik Shofim, and based on Kishuf, they would turn themselves into animals, or they looked, appeared like animals, and that's why Shaul was given the command of Veimata Meish Ad Isha Meol Ad Yonik Bishar Ad Se Migamal Ad Chamor. Now, why does Rashi have to introduce Kishuf over here? After all, the Mechilta says at the end of Parashas Bishalach that the mitzvah of killing Amalek includes the animals as well. Shal Yomru Gamal Ze Shal Amalek, that they should have no shame, no zecher to Amalek. So that's part of the mitzvah of Timcha. So why does Rashi have to introduce the fact that through Kishuv, and you're not killing the behemoths because of the behemoths, you're killing the behemoths because they're Amalekim? The answer is because the rules change. If Rashi holds like the smag, which is a leap of faith, then Rashi holds that the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek was not given to Shmuel, not given to Shaul. And Haraya, Shaul had to wait for the Nevuah of Shmuel. The answer is, as the Rambam says, that even though the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek is postponed, is dependent upon on Mashiach, but nevertheless, there was a Horash Shah. Oh, within the context of the Horash Shah, Shmuel did not give to Shaul the whole kit and caboodle, the entire mitzvah of Timcha Zecher Amalek and all its trappings. He told Shaul to go out and battle against Amalek, to kill the Amalekim. So why is he telling him to kill the animals? Not b'toras Mechias Amalek, but rather b'toras Kishuv. As far as Mechias Amalek is concerned, Shaul was not commanded in the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek because it was before Mashiach. So it comes out that there are tzvei dinim in Mechias Amalek. There's a real mitzvah, the Iker mitzvah of Mechias Amalek, and that's derived from Timcha Zecher Amalek. And the smag and the Rambam and maybe even Rashi hold that mitzvah is only Bahaya b'nichacha Hashem, etc. at the time of Mashiach. And then there's another mitzvah of Amalek which comes through Horash Shah. And that's a separate mitzvah unto itself. It's not part of the general mitzvah of Mechias Amalek. And the nafka mina is going to be the behemoths. That if we're dealing with Timcha Zecher Amalek, the Mechilta indicates that includes destroying everything, the possessions, and the animals, everything that has any connection, any shaykhs to Amalek. But if we talk about a Horash Shah and a separate mitzvah, mitzvah miyuchedes, li'lachem im Amalek, then the behemoths are not included in that mitzvah. Is Memela, maybe you can answer why the Megillah records that Mordechai took over the house of Beis Haman. The halacha is that you have to destroy everything that belongs to Amalek, including the bias of Amalek. And clearly Haman was Mizera Amalek. The answer is because we all like the smog, the mitzvah of Mechias HaMolech doesn't apply until Mashiach. And if that be the case, Mordechai did not have the mitzvah of Mechias HaMolech, which would mean Li'avid Zichram Legamre, even Bateyam, and even destroy their homes. But rather, this was a kind of horasha that we have to destroy whatever we can from HaMolech. And the whole scope of Mechias HaMolech, the whole extension of HaMolech, does not apply here. Therefore Mordechai is allowed to take over the house of Ham. But the Shitas HaBahag, the Shitas HaSmag, excuse me, that V'hoya B'nichacha Hashem Elokechem Yisaviv means the Yemos HaMashiach is very difficult. Because the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Chaf Amud Beis actually analyzes this pasuk and comes to a whole different conclusion. The Gemara says, "Shalosh mitzvos nitztava Yisrael b'knisasam la'aretz." Number one, lahamid lahem melech. Number two, lahachri zaro shalom molek. And number three, livnos lahem beis habachira. So the Gemara is telling us that the mitzvah of lahachri zechra molek applies b'knisasam la'aretz Yisrael immediately when they enter into the land, just like the mitzvah of hamodas melech and B'niyas Beis HaBechira. In fact, the Gemara goes back and forth, vacillating as to what comes first, building the Beis HaMikdash, or L'hachir Zaro Shalom Molech. And the Gemara says, K'shu Omer V'aniach Lachem Mikol Eivechem Yisaviv, and then it says, V'hoya Amokam Asher Yivcha Hashem Elokecha, and more, the Gemara says, derived from the sequence of Psukim, that L'hachir Zaro Shalom Molech T'chila, that the pasuk of destroying Amalek comes before the pasuk of building the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore Hachras HaZara Shel Amalek is no heges even before Beis HaBechira. So for example, David and Shlomo were involved in the mitzvah as kings of the mitzvah Beis HaBechira. Correct? There was no Mashiach at that time. And now we're saying that the mitzvah Hachras HaZara Amalek precedes and sequentially comes even before the mitzvah Beis HaBechira. So clearly the Gemara indicates that when it says in the Pasuk V'hoya B'nichacha, it's not referring to Yemos HaMashiach, but rather it's referring to what's called Yerusha V'yeshiva, meaning at what point is the mitzvah of Hamadas Melech and Binyan Beis HaBechira Chal, from the moment that we go into the land, we conquer the land, and we settle the land. It has nothing to do with Mashiach. So for example, Yoshua enters into the land. It takes him 7 years to conquer the land, and then another 7 years to divvy up the land. So we have now Yerusha and Yeshiva. After 14 years, when they cross the Yarden, 14 years later, now there's a chiyuv of Melech, Hachrasa Samolek, Binyan Beis HaBechira. And all this is codified by the Rambam in Perek Aleph Milchus Melachim, the famous Rambam, Sholosh Mitzvos Nitztavu B'Yisrael B'Knisas La'aretz. So it's clear from the sugya that the mitzvah of Mechias HaMolech is not dependent upon Mashiach. And that the pasuk which the Smag builds his whole theory on, of V'hoya B'nichacha Hashem Elokecha, we're talking about conquering the enemies that occupy the land. You know, the so-called Palestinians in those days, right? And they have to be conquered. And then, after we settle the land, we're ready for these three mitzvahs in a sequence of Hamadas Melech, Mechias HaMolech, and then finally Binyan Beis HaBechira. So it's very difficult to assume now that V'hoya B'nichacha Hashem Elokecha, the way the Smag understood it, is dependent and postponed until Yemos HaMashiach. That's the kasha that we're asking. So the one who built a great castle in the sky based on this Smag, and we used it to answer up a steer in Rashi's about whether Mechias HaMolech includes killing the animals or is it just based on Kishuv. We saw the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayis that clearly indicates that Shaul HaMelech was receiving a Horas Shah from Shmuel based on Nevuah, meaning it was not part of the general mitzvah of Mechias HaMolech, and it all fit in very well to the Smag, that the mitzvah of Mechias HaMolech is postponed until Yemos HaMashiach. But how do we square the Bahag with the Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin?
Which the Smag certainly knew.
Yes. Now the Rambam in the fifth parak of Hilchas Molochim seems to make a fundamental distinction between the mitzvah of Lahachrim Shiva Amamin, excuse me, the mitzvah of Losachaya called the Shama, which means that we have to destroy the seven nations that occupy Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan. And the Rambam writes, Kol shebol yodo echad mihem v'lo harogo over v'lo tasa shenemar kol lo techaya kol nesham. So in other words, you're in Palestine and you see a Canaani, and you have to go ahead and kill him. If you don't kill him, you violate the essay of lo sechai kol nesham. That's the Rambam in Perek Halacha Dalet. You fast forward now to Halacha Hey, and he gets to the mitzvah of Timcha Zecha Molek. And he doesn't repeat what he said before, kol abol yodo ech mehem v'lo harogo over b'yesei. You know, you get the impression from the Rambam that the mitzvah of Mechias HaMolek is fundamentally different than the mitzvah of Hachromas Zayin Amamin. The latter, Hachromas Zayin Amamin, is a mitzvah that's incumbent upon every single individual who encounters one of the Zayin Amamin, and he's got to kill him. Whereas the mitzvah of Mechias HaMolek is a mitzvah that's incumbent upon the tzibur. Like we said before, we appoint a melech, and he gathers together the troops, you know, the community of Israel, to go out and fight the battle of Amalek. It's not a mitzvah on you as an individual. My father once told me that Rav Moshe Bick, I don't know if you've heard of him, Zichron Levrach, he's one of the poskim in America.
Well, his family is related to Ezra Bick.
Huh? Ezra's uncle. Yeah. Ezra's father's Charlie Bick, and Charlie's brother was Rav Moshe Bick. You couldn't believe they were brothers if you saw them, not for a million miles. They were so different in every way. And Rav Moshe Bick was a real kanoi. So they once my father tells me a story, they were once sitting at a wedding and they were schmoozing a little, so they said to Rav Moshe Bick, if I told you that this guy was an Amaleki, what would you do? So Rav Moshe Bick said, immediately I would take out my sword and kill him. Without even thinking. Apparently Rav Moshe Bick held that the mitzvah of Mechias HaMolek is a chovas yachid, meaning it's an individual. It's not a chovas tzibur within the framework of Melchama. But the Rambam seems to indicate, at least in the first reading, that this is a different... He doesn't repeat what he said earlier with regard to Hachromah Zayin Amamin, that kol shebol yodo echad mehem v'lo hargo is over below us. In other words, when it says Lo Sechai called the Shom in the Torah, it's talking about Zayin Amamin. Mechias HaMolek is Timcha, is on the Tzibur. And if you look in the Sefer Mitzvahs L'Rambam, Mitzvah Reish Mem Ches, he writes, Hachrosa Zaro Shal HaMolek HaVichovas Tzibur V'lo Al Kol Ish V'ish. However, the Sefer Achinuch in Mitzvah Tofreish Dalet writes, Nitztavenu limchos zaro shalamolk la'abed zichro min ha'olam. And he writes the following, Vizos, meaning this mitzvah of destroying Amalek, min ha'mitzvos hamutolos al atzibur, kulon, so far so good. It sounds like he's also learning like the Rambam that the chova of destroying Amalek is a chovas tzibur. Ukeinyan Sha'amru Sanhedrin Chaf of Inbei Sholosh Mitzvahs is Tava Yisrael Vishas Knisos Lords Limnos Lem Melech Lemanos Lem Melech Livnos Lem Beis Abachir Lahachir Zaro Shalom Molek. But then he writes the following, the Sefer Chinuch, one of the Rishonim, Ube Emes Ki Gam Al Kol Yochid Mi Yisrael Hazcharim. Okay, that's interesting. That this mitzvah is only incumbent upon males and not females, because women don't go out to battle. Again, ube'emes ki gam al kol yochid mi Yisrael hazcharim mutol chiyuv lahargo uleabdom min ha'olam im yesh koch biyodom bechol makom ubechol zman im yimtza echad mizan. This is Rav Moshe Bick. Because it's clear from the Sefer Achinuch that the mitzvah Mechias HaMolek is incumbent upon the young. Okay, we'll stop here. So let's open up to the Ches Amud Beis. So our goal for today is twofold. Number one, to finish the Mishnah of Mitzorah and the difference between a Muzgar and a Mukhlat, and to to begin the next Mishnah of Sfarim. So we got it to Omer Le Abaye. Let's see if we can find this. If you're counting up from below, so let's start from the Mishnah and count up, it's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 8 lines up from the from above the Mishnah. And the first word in the line is Ella, and then it goes Ella Bayomim. Now let's just review where we're holding. Rava made a big deal about the fact that it says in the parasha of Prima and Priya, it says the word Vitaher. And Rava said that Vitaher indicates that he's already Tahar. It doesn't say Viyitaher. So what is he Tahar for? You know, vis-a-vis what din of Mitzora is he Tahar? When I say he, we're talking about a Muzgar. And the answer is that he is Tahar from Priya and Prima. And we had a Turi Evan, if you remember, that was the Kal, that was the lowest one on the totem pole. Fine. So then Rava says that I'm going to apply the same yardstick, meaning the same methodology of interpreting the word Vitoyer to the parasha of Zav. And what's going to happen is that if the Zav was Mesid, he leaned on a Kli Cheres, and we're talking on the seventh day of the Svira Zayin Nikiyim, and then before the end of that day, he saw another Re'iyah, which means he was Soser all the Zayin Nikiyim, then there's no din of Tumah L'Mafreya. Now, this Vitar is telling me that it's still Tar as far as the Kli Cheres is concerned. The biggest Chiddush of Zav is that he's metame tumas hesed in the case of a Kli Cheres. Remember we discussed yesterday, right. It's a double chiddush. Alright, I'm not going to go over that now. Oh. So then we have the following question that Abaye asks. Ella Omale Abaye, now that you've told me that I skipped one important chazara that we'll need to review one point. Rava says that he has a source for the exclusion of a muskar from Priya and Prima in the fact that it says Asher Bo HaNoga. These words in the Torah, Asher Bo HaNoga, set up a fundamental difference between someone whose tahara process depends upon refuas gufo, and he has to change his physiological state, and that refers to a mukhlat, as opposed to someone whose tuma and tahara doesn't depend upon restoring his physiological health, and that's called a muzgar. Because even if the nega remains exactly as it were at the beginning of the 7 days and at the end, nevertheless we mitire him, because in the case of a muzgar, ein saraso tluya begufo. Begufo means refuas gufo. And since in the parasha of Priya and Prima, the Torah uses the following term. It says Hatzaru asher yibo yiga. I'm sorry, Hatzaru asher bo hanoga. Yeah, prumim veroshia parua. So Rav makes a big deal about the words asher yibo asher bo hanoga, that the words asher bo hanoga refer exclusively to a mukhlat whose tara depends upon refuas gufo, but not to a muzgar. And therefore we derive the conclusion that the mitzvah of prima and priya does not apply in the case of a muzgar. Now let's go to the parasha of Shiluach min Amachne, and this is in Vayikra Gimel, Yud Gimel. I'm sorry, Pasuk Tesvav. I'll read to you the whole pasuk. It says, "Kol asher asher kol yimei asher." Hanega bo yitma Tomehu, Bodad Yeshev Michutz L'machne Moshavo. Now, once again, you have the Pasuk Asher.
I have it as Yud Gimel Memvav.
Memvav, great. I said Tesvav, that's because it's very, very small. I'm sorry. So he says the following, that Zabai's argument against Rava. You're telling me that whenever it says in the Torah, Asher Bo Hanoga, or Shanoga Bo, it's referring to a Muchlat, whose refuah depends upon the change in his guf, and not to a Muzgar, who remains status quo. Now we're in the parasha of Michutz L'machne, of Shiluah Chutz L'machne. Elameyata, when we read the Pasuk Kol Asher Hanoga Bo Yitma Tomi Ubod Yeshiv Michutz L'machne Moshavo, is Misha Tzarata Tlu, according to you, Rav, it should mean Misha Tzarata Tluya Begufo, that's a Muchlat, because his whole process of purification depends upon his restoring his health. That's called Asher Bo Hanoga, according to Rav's interpretation. Who did on Shiluach? He's the one who has to be sent outside of the Machne. But in the case of someone who's a Mitzora She'ein Tzorato Tluya Begufo, namely a Muzgar, is Enoton Shiluach. V'chite Machinam, if you're going to tell me that's true, that we exclude a Muzgar from the parasha of Shiluach, is let's read out Mishnah. Hakatani, the Mishnah says, Ein Bein Mitzora Muzgar L'Mitzora Muchlat Ela Priya Uprima. And the obvious diuk that we always say whenever we see a Mishnah of Ein Bein is Holy in Shiluach Ulitamuye Bibia Zevezeh Shavin, meaning except for this special exclusion of Priya and Prima, all the other dinim of Tuma apply equally to both a Muchlat and a Muzgar. So for example, this, you remember we discussed the fact that a Mitzora has a very unique kind of Tuma called Ohel, that if he enters into a room, then the other Mekalim in that room, if they're there for a certain short period of time, they contract Tuma. And now we also assume that Shiluach Chutz L'machna applies to a Muzgar as it does to a Muchlat, because that's not listed in the Mishnah as one of the distinctions. So once again, Rabbi, you're caught in a trap, because if we're going to go with your, if we're going to consistently apply your interpretation of the Psukim, that whenever the Torah says Asher Bo Anoga or Anega Bo, which, right, that that means Muchlat and not Muzgar, then we should exclude a Muzgar from Shiluach, and that's not true. So Rav answers, you're right, that I should be consistent, and I am going to be consistent. And I'm going to assume that whenever it says Asher Bo Anoga, it's coming to include only a Muchlat to the exclusion of a Muskar. But here, with regard to Shiluach, we have a Ribui. And the Torah puts it back in, the Torah takes Muskar and puts it back into the parasha of Shiluach. Why? And I'll read the pasuk. It says, Yemei Asher Hanega Bo. Okay, that was the same pasuk we just read before. Right? Vayikra Yigimel Memvav. And it says that Yemei Asher Hanega Bo. But notice, the Torah adds an extra word at the beginning of the pasuk. Which extra word? Kol. It could have said Yemei Asher Nega Bo. We send them Shchutz L'mach. Why does it say Kol Yemei? So Rava says that the extra word Kol is Larabos Mitzora Muzgar L'Shiluach. That's telling me again. We're in the parasha of Shiluach. Kol. If it would have said Hanega Bo, it would refer only to a Muchlat, but it says Kol Asher Hanega Bo, it's coming to include even a Muzgar. So that really ends this part of the sugya. And as far as what we know about Mitzora is concerned, we can summarize the following, that whether or not we're dealing with a Muchlat or a Muzgar, we have a Tuma of Tzaras. And that means, number one, that he, the Mitzora, has the special chumrah of Ohel, like we said before. And it means that he has to be sent chutz l'machne. And it means that he's metameh like a muchlat. However, the Torah excludes him from Priya Uprima. Logically, based on the laws of methodology of hermeneutic principles of how to interpret the pasuk, we should have come to the conclusion that he's excluded from Shiluach as well. But because of the extra word kol, we're going to include the muskar in the parasha of Shiluach Chutz Lamach. So basically, the only difference in terms of the tumah itself is with regard to Priya and Prima. That's what comes out.
If you are Metame Be'ohel, and now next day you find out that he's a Torah based on the Yomim, but people are Tame, or things are Tame because there's no Lamafreya, Metaher, what was Tame?
The din of Lamafreya, that's what we want to discuss.
Yeah, so is it Lamafreya for the Tahara also? I mean, is it? Oh.
So let's talk a little bit about Lamafreya.
I can understand the question.
Question is, if you say a muskar is does the same as a mukhlat,
right,
that he goes into a house and he mitamis everything in the house,
mm-hmm,
and I say tomorrow the coin comes and says, oh, you're Torah, you're not a muskar, and you're a muskar, Torah. Yami.
Oh, you want to know where the tahara works? No, tahara doesn't work on my freya. I was thinking a different question. Let's review where the tumah works on my freya. For example, let's say the Mitzorah Muska goes into a room and leaves Metame Odom Akela, right? And then the coin declares him Tahar.
Right.
Let me say it this way. The coin declares him Tahar, correct?
During the seventh day.
Right? And he goes into a room and then Pasha Hanega, correct? And then it spreads. Do we say now that even though that at the moment that people were in the room with him, the Kohen had already declared him Tar, but now that we find out that he's Tomei, so between the Kohen's declaration and Pasha Nega, he was in the same room with a man or Caleb, should we say now that we're going to be Metamei the other Caleb in the room with the Mafreya?
So isn't that based on machlokas of the Kana Labal?
Let's just review again. Okay. This will take us a few minutes.
Okay.
Just looking at the clock. Hopefully, we'll fit this all in. I have a desire to start the next Mishnah today. But let's review this.
We haven't gotten to the Mishnah yet, right?
No. We still have a piece about Shtei Tziporin and Teglachas. We'll get to that in just a minute. But we're going a little bit, to review. Rewind what we did, okay? So let's talk about Lamafreya in two contexts. Number one, in the context of Zav, and number two, in the context of Mitzora. So in the context of Zav, we were talking about Tumas Heset on a Kli Cheres. And Rava says that since it says V'toher in the parasha of Zav, it teaches me that we're not Metame L'mafreya. So what does it mean? A Zav needs Zayin Nekiyim. He counted Zayin Nekiyim. He hasn't finished his seventh day yet. And he was Metayer himself in the mikvah. He was Tovil in the mikvah. Now he sits or lays on 10 mattresses. Right? That's called Tumas, Mishkav, and Moshe. But he's already gone to the mikvah, correct? Oh. So what's going to be the deal if he sees a Re'ia Hasoseris? Should we apply the principle of Lamafreya? So the Gemara makes the following distinction. As far as Mishkav and Moshe is concerned, so if he had a Mishkav and Moshe between Tevila and Re'ia, again, when I say Riyah, I mean Riyah Soseris within the framework of the Zion Yomim. That's Metame L'mafreya. But as far as Hesed on a Kli Cheres, that's not going to be L'mafreya.
You said that's the weakest. Though,
right? Right, that's the weakest. And that's going to be derived from V'toher. Okay, that's as far as Mitzorah is concerned. I'm sorry, as far as Zav is concerned. Now, how do we apply the same thing as far as Mitzorah is concerned? So you remember that there was a long Rashi here that we didn't go through that was called Hachanami, that's the fourth of the wide lines. So I'm just going to again summarize that Rashi for you. Rashi says Hachanami, the same thing should apply to a Mitzorah Muzgar. Okay? And what does this mean in the case of Mitzorah Muzgar? We said that a Mitzorah Muzgar, based on the Pasuk V'toher, does not require Priya and Prima. Mm-hmm. And now we're saying, no, maybe that word V'toher tells me absolutely nothing about Priya and Prima. And that's why Rav is going to introduce Asher Bo Anoga, if you remember. Oh, but rather, what is the word V'toher teaching me in the case of Mitzorah? And this is what we call the mirror image of Zav, that there's also in Mitzorah a possibility of Lamafreya. And here's the case. The Kohen declared at the end of the 7 days this Mitzorah as Tohar. The Mitzorah therefore was Tovel, and then Posha Hanega. Should we say Tomei Lamafreya? Right? And that would mean that the special chumrah of a mitzorah, that he has what's called tumas ohel, meaning when he enters into a room, everybody under the same roof becomes tomei, that's Adam and Kalim. Should we say that that chumrah of mitzorah will apply now because posha nega? And again, let's assume, again, you remember that we had a long discussion about whether or not we go from 1 7 days of Hezger into the second day of Hezger. Right. Let's assume, just again, only because our time is limited, our koichas are limited, that we're talking still within the framework of 7 days, meaning we finished one period of 7 days, nothing changed, it was status quo. Now we're being projected into the second Hezger of another 7 days, we're going to get to number 14. And now it's Posha Nega. So obviously he becomes Tomei. So here's a case of a Muzgar who becomes Tomei. Now what about the people who were with him in the Ohel after he went to the Mikvah based on the Kohen's declaration that he's Tar? Should we say that since the Torah says V'Toher, therefore, and I'm quoting the Gemara, Tar Hashta Milatame B'Bilam Afreya.
Right.
And I'm not sure if this is going to be Paskin La'alocha. We have to look in the Rambam, but it seems from the logic of the Gemara that we're going to come to the following conclusion, that just like in Zav, with regard to the unique tomb of Heses in a Kli Cheres, we're not going to go to Mafreya when he sees a Ria Soseres at the end of the Zayin Nikiyim, meaning the Ria was between the Tvila. I'm sorry. Let's put it this way, it's A, B, and C, right? I'm going now on B, meaning the middle of the sandwich. The Heset of the Zav on a Kli Cheres was B, was in between Tvila, because again, on the beginning of the Zayin Nikim that morning, he could go to Mikvah, and the Re'iyah Soseres. So we say that it's not Tomei L'Mafreya, and that Kli Cheres is Tar. So too, by parallel, in the case of a Zav, if after the Kohen declares him Tar, and he goes to the Mikvah, and now, before Posha Nega, he goes into a room with other people, then those people are not going to be Tomei L'Mafreya. Even though, again, you would say that Posha Nega, just like the case of Ria Soteres, should work L'Mafreya. But the answer is that since Ria Soteres doesn't work L'Mafreya with regard to the unique Tum of Zav, namely Tumas Hesed in a Kli Cheres, so too, with regard to a Mitzorah, again, because in both cases the Torah uses the same term, V'Toyer, it means that there's not going to be a Tum L'Mafreya with the unique Tum of Mitzorah, namely Ohel, people in the same Ohel.
Can I ask a question? This is completely unrelated, and if you don't want to answer it, you just tell me that it's not really. But with women and Nida and Tefillah for a woman coming out of Nida, the extra 7 days are based on Zav.
Right. We're going to consider.
But why is it they can't go? Because here we were talking about somebody being doing Tefillah during the day on the seventh day, but why do they have to wait till the...
Right, so that's a sugya masechta nida, that we technically, according to the Torah law, she can go to mikvah by day. That's true for both the Shomer Siyom Kenegan Yom and the Zava Gedola, which is our nida. So a nida really can go to mikvah on the seventh day. However, they made a gzera. Now I'm trying to remember exactly, it's a very complicated sugya, exactly how the gzera operated. They were afraid that she would have a relationship with her husband after she goes to the mikveh. And then if she sees Aria Soseres, then he was Chayv Kares. She's also Chayv Kares.
Okay, in that case, even if it's after the fact, is that okay, so that would apply also to Zavi here. They'd be the person, if they decide before the end of the day, before
well,
the
again,
power here.
Well, again, now that we're only talking about Tumah, you know, we're talking about whether a Kli is Tomei or not,
right.
Or we're talking
right.
about...
But, I guess what I'm saying though is that the Kli Cheres is excluded, but every other restriction, including Kares, if Zava has relations, that
right.
all applies.
Right, that's because of a that's because of,
so
a, of a din of Rias Oseres.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
And again, logically, once you apply the principle of Rias Oseres, then it makes no sense to say that that which he normally would contract Tuma is not contracting Tuma. That this din of Lafre, it's all based on the Pasuk of Tohar.
Okay.
And that's the exception to the rule rather than the rule.
Got it.
Now, what are the next two words that you have in your Gemara? Do you have the words ihochi?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
You got to take those out. You must take out those two words. And I'm quoting the Bach. Because ihochi means, based on what you said until now, I have a question to ask you. That's not at all true over here. So again, I don't know if Artskill points this out. I hope he does.
He just has the notation to the Bach, but it doesn't.
Okay, that's good enough. If he notes the Bach, that's good enough.
Heaven to your souls, there's no Yuhaki.
Excellent. Okay? So I think we have in front of us here the five of us, each one of us has a different Gemara in front of him.
Right.
But what's common to all the Gemaras is you got to take out these words, Yuhaki. Because at this point, the Gemara is going back to the Mishnah. And if you remember, the Mishnah had said the following. That there's a distinction between...
Oh, sorry, what the article brings up, it actually doesn't use the Bach, it refers to... The Rishash apparently says that this actually is connected.
Okay, so again... I don't want to go through the Rishash here, but I want to just tell you why I think the Bach is the easiest way to go for us. The Mishnah says that there's a difference between what's called Tar Mitoch Hezger... and tar mitoch hechleit in the purification process with regard to two elements, tiglachas and tziporin. So again, until now, we've been discussing the comparison between muskar and muchlat as far as the tum itself is concerned. And one of the elements of tuma is prion prima, and we discussed shiluach, and we discussed the possibility of a tumas ohel and the whole nine yards. But now... the Mishnah is addressing a different dimension of the parish of Mitzorah, and that is the Tara process. And in the Tara process, we have the following elements. The Torah spells this all out, and it says you need Teglachas. You remember we discussed this, he has to shave all the hair off. We need Tziporim, two Tziporim that get sent. One was live, and one is Shechted, and all the whole ritual there. The Mishnah tells us that if after the Hezger, right, if someone who doesn't have any simone tumah, the Kohen says again at the end of the 7 days he has no simone tumah, and he sends him home, which means he becomes tar. He needs at this point to be mitar himself from the state of mitzorah that he was in as a muzgar, as we discussed at great length. A mitzorah muzgar is also tameh. Yeah, but what about the process of tara? And the Mishnah says that Tiglachas v'tziporim did not apply to the Tara of a Muzgar. Basically, let him go to the Mikvah and Shalom al Yisrael. My time alone. The Katani, Ein Bein Tar Mitoch Hezgir, Tar Mitoch Hechler, El Tiglachas v'tziporim, u'tziporim. Why did these two elements of the Tara process, why are they suspended with regard to a Muzgar? Omer Abaye. Omar Kro v'yotza haKohen el michutz l'machne v'hine nirpa nega hatzoras. Now this pasuk, somebody's going to have to help me here with the chumash, which is in Yudalid Gimel. If I'm not mistaken, this, and I hope I'm not mistaken, this pasuk is in the parsha of Taras Hamitzora.
That's right.
Is that true?
Yes, that's right.
Because afterwards it's going to mention the Tziporim and the Giluah, correct?
Right.
Oh. Now the Pasuk says, our Pasuk, Pasuk Gimel says, Vehine Nirpa Nega Hatzaras. You remember that Rava was arguing that Nirpa means he went through a process of physiological restoration of health.
Yeah.
Oh. So then we're only talking about Mishitzarato, Tluya Berfuos, and that's a Mukhlat. Yotzazet, to the exclusion of a Muzgar, Shein Tzarato, Tluya Berfuos, Ela Biyomin. That if at the end of the 7 days, the Kohen declares that he doesn't see any Simoni Tuma, everything physiologically is status quo. He has, next week he has another appointment with his dermatologist. He's tar. And that means that Ein Tzarato, meaning the process of Tara from Itzora, is not Tluya Berefua El Biyomin, the passage of time. Nothing changed during that period of time, and yet he becomes Tar. And the answer is, therefore, that when the Parsha says regarding Tziporim and Giluach, Vehine Nirpa, Negat Tzoras, we're only referring to Tzorato Atluya Begufo and Berefuos, and that's a Mukhlat as opposed to a Musk.
What would have been the Havamina to say that he should have to bring Korbanos? I mean, if you're saying he's Tar.
Well, no, what we're saying is that basically during that 7 day period, he's Tameh. I mean, in every sense. I mean, the only difference is Priya and Prima. But other than that, which are quite, you know, I'm not even sure how to define Priya and Prima, whether that, you know, in Lumbus is that called, is Midini Tuma, or it's a separate Chovas Mitzvah. I don't know how to define that. But as far as Tuma is concerned, you know, the whole kit and caboodle, you know, with all the Chumras of Tumas Mesorah, that applies even to a Muzgar. Which again, that itself is strange, by the way. You know,
intuitively. Well, I'm saying,
why should it be Tomei? You know, he doesn't even have Simoni Tuma.
Right.
But keep in mind, he does have this phenomenon, and in all four different, you know, categories that we discussed, he has Kashir Gris, he has the Kikruma Beitza. You know, this he's got the size and the color. He's a real candidate for Tzaraz, and in fact, he is a Mitzorah for 7 days. You know, the lumpness is that the very act of making him into a Muzgar, which again, the Rambam Shita side, but according to other Rishonim, that itself is Metameh. Okay. And the Kohen is going to declare that Muzgar means declare he's Tameh. So if that be the case, let's give him the whole 9 yards, and let's assume that when he finally gets out of that state of Tuma, he has to make that transition with the same requirements that apply to a Muzgar.
But if you were to, I think the conclusion of that, though, is if you were to go down that path, we didn't have these exclusions, then what's the difference between
only Priya and Prima? Very strange. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's more than that, because again, keep in mind, Eric, that the difference is going to be that nothing changed. In the case of a Mukhlat, something has to change. Right. Those Simoni Tuma have to be wiped off the face of his skin, if you follow, pardon the pun. Right. But in the case of a Muzgar, his Tara does not depend upon any change whatsoever. But in terms of Halacha Lemaisa, I identify with your question, because there really is almost nothing different in terms of how this Tuma exhibits itself. The only difference is Priya and Prima, which is so secondary when you think about it.
So,
maybe it has to do with the fact that, you know, psychologically he's not real. You see, this would be interesting. You know, there's a whole sugya in Erechin about what brings about, what sin is a person guilty of. Because the Ramban in his Pirush HaTorah says that the metaphysics of Tzaras is a beautiful gift from God, that, you know, when a person sins, he gets zapped on the spot. You know, if we had bad Chas V'Sholom, maybe we would be better Jews, you know. But we, you know, the famous story of Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, you know, the founder of the Muslim movement, he met a Jew who was the innkeeper where he stayed, and he noticed, because he used to stay by him very often, that he wasn't so frum anymore. Like he was, so he said, "What happened to you? You know, you're not makpin on mitzvahs, you're not going. What changed?" He says, "Because I had a guest in my hotel, and he was from the maskilim, you know, he was a kofar, and he said, "What, you believe in God? And God tells you not to eat chazer? And you're going to get hit by God because you chazer? Bring me a piece of chazer. And I'm going to eat it in front of you. I'll show you that nothing's going to happen to me." So this innkeeper, again, you have to understand the psychology of a person, you know, 150 years ago. He says, he says, "Where's God over here? The guy ate chazer. Nothing happened to him. He's healthy as anything." So, you know, this kind of attitude that, you know, that if we were zapped on the spot, if the guy ate the chazer and he dropped dead or he choked from it, then I would stop eating chazer for the rest of my life, right? Because I would see that God is God. So that's what happened at the time of Tzorah. So this whole sugya in Erechin that tries to figure out exactly what he was guilty of, what crime and what avera he violated, becomes very relevant to this discussion between a mukhlat and a muzgar.
Right.
Because if we're saying that a mukhlat needs Priya and Prima, you know, we're going to, his hair is wild, and you're going to rip his garments and everything else. I mean, that's a certain level of guilt. And it's an exhibition of his criminal act that doesn't apply to a muzgar. So that even though the muzgar is tameh and he's quarantined and he's chutz lamachne and everything else, right? But nevertheless,
those are really though acts of mourning. I mean, that's what we have, those are things we affiliate with mourning, right?
Right. And mourning itself has to do with sin. And this I heard from my Rebbe many times. Avelus is really a form of tshuva. Because, you know, Tzidduk HaDin and Hashem is Kelam Unave Novel, you know, and so forth and so on. There is an element here of, in fact, the Ramban actually in his Torah Sa'adam, in Avels, he coins a phrase, his nevel. Do you ever hear the word nevel? Nevel is what, I mean, if I can picture, Baruch Hashem, we don't see it so frequently here, although we see it here too. In America, we see it all the time. A homeless person who's, I mean, you don't even want to go near him. He just, the odor and the hair is all over the place. And the Ramban says that's nevel. There's deep psychology here because in a person is a state of avelus. He can't function, he can't focus on beautifying himself, you know, on cleaning and you know, going to a sauna and taking a hot bath and so forth. So he's really in a state of nevel. And the Ramban develops that idea that avelus has to do with nevel. You know, I can't focus on my physical beauty or anything. And to a certain extent, I think this idea of prima and priya, especially priya, is also a reflection of this concept of nevel. But that doesn't apply to a muzgar. So, you know, the muzgar must be guilty of some element of sin because he's tameh. And maybe we could even say that the basic thrust of muzgar is physiological. Maybe he's very contagious. And we have to take that into consideration. So lock him up. Send him chutz lamachna. But again, it's complicated. It's really complicated because as soon as you go down the physical path, physiologically, you get into deep trouble. For example, there's no Re'ias Kohen during Shivas Yimei Achasnus. So a man gets married, he's a Mitzorah basically, physiologically, and he's not a Mitzorah al Pidin. Why? Because the Kohen can't see the Nega, declare him Tomei. The Din of Moadim, for example, there's no declaration of Tumah of in Tzoras on a Moed. Also, the very fact that some of these simoni tuma don't seem to have anything to do with physiology, you know, michio, for example, we spoke about, right? There's a healthy piece of skin in the middle. I don't know what the dermatologist is going to do with that. I don't know. All right, Rabbi, so we'll just start the next mishnah. I don't know how we're doing on the clock. We have, let's say, 7-8 minutes, whatever we have. Let's at least start the next mishnah. So, just by way of introduction, we have something called a Sefer Torah. And that means it has Kedushas HaSefer. Now that expresses itself in a number of different ways. Number one, it means that we could read from it publicly. Number two, it means we have to treat it with respect and awe. Number three, it means that it's Metami Tumas Yodayim, which was Gzeira D'Rabbanon. The Rabbanon wanted to make sure that we take care of the Sfarim, we don't put food near the Sfarim, because food in those days was very common for the creatures to come and eat the food, you know, like the mice and so forth and so on. So we wanted to keep food far away from the Sfarim. So what we did was we said that if you touch a Sefer, then you're going to be Metami the food that's near it, if it's Truma. And that's called Tumas Yadayim. And finally, there's what's called a Mitzvah D'Oraisa. It's number 613 on the list of writing a Sefer Torah. So all these are the dinim of a Sefer Torah. Now Rashi tells us, which has to be studied, you know, this Rashi has to be taken under advisement. Rashi says, Sfarim, Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim. You see that Rashi? About 7 lines up from the end of the page. So Rashi holds that all the dinim of Sefer apply even to Nevi'im Uksuvim. So for example, we're going to see in a minute that there's a din of Tfira, which means that you have to write a Sefer on klaf, which is made of the or of a Behemoth Tahorah. Then you have to attach one klaf to another, and you have to sew it together. And there's going to be Alach L'Moshe Mi Sinai that you have to sew it together in a very specific way, you have to use gidim, and you can't use pishtan and different types of ropes and so forth and so on. All this apparently, according to Rashi, is going to apply even to Nevi'im and Ksuvim. And you may notice that there are people who are very, very makpid about this. For example, when we read the Haftorah publicly, they'll make sure we read it from a sefer. You know, there's a nach that's written on klaf and dyo and ksav ashuris and so forth and so on. Now that's as far as Sfarim are concerned. Then we have what's called tefillin u'mezuzas. And each one is a separate category. But for our purposes, we're going to combine tefillin and mezuzas into one. And that's going to oversimplify something that's much more complicated, because there are basic differences between tefillin and mezuzah, but the Mishnah gathers them together. And tefillin and mezuzah also have what we call kedushas klaf. The tefillin has to be written, meaning the parashas have to be written on klaf with dyo. And the same thing applies to a mezuzah. So the Mishnah wants to know, are there any differences, are there any unique requirements which apply to tefillin and mezuzah that don't apply to sfarim? Because it's interesting, if I were to ask you for a knee-jerk response in the hierarchy, which do you think would be more chamor, a sefer or tefillin and mezuzah? What would be your...
You'd say sefer.
I would have said a sefer. And it comes out from this Mishnah Punkfakeret. The Mishnah says, "Ein din sfarim l'tfilin mezuzas, elisha sfarim." With regard to a sefer Torah, we have a much more liberal approach, so to speak, much more permissive. Nichtavim b'chol lashon. Now, what this means by nichtavim b'chol lashon, and we'll soon see that Rabbi Shimon is going to disagree with the Mishnah. It doesn't mean that you can write the Torah in French or in English and it's got Kedusha Sefer Torah. What it means is that if it's written in Lashon Kodesh, just that the words themselves, okay, so there's something called, okay, this is what we have to write. There's something called a Ksav and there's something called a Lashon. Okay, Ksav is the script, right? And Lashon is the language. So what we're saying, that when we're saying that a Sefer Torah could be written in any language, that's as far as the Lashon is concerned. You see that? B'chol Lashon. That's not talking about the Ksav. Right? So what is the Ksav of a Sefer Torah? What script do we have?
Shooks.
Oh, so the Mishnah says the following. The Mishnah says, "Tefillin mezuzah seinich tovin ella ashuris."
That's a ksav, though. That's
right. That's a ksav. In other words, that tefillin mezuzahs require ashuris. Now, the word ashuris, and this is what the Ritva points out, can be taken in two different contexts. It could be taken in the context of a ksav, and it could be taken in the context of a lashon. We're going to soon see that the word Ashuris here in this Mishnah is not a reference to the Ksav, but to the Lashon. Meaning that there's no difference between Sfarim, Tefillah, Mezuzah as far as the Ksav is concerned. It means they all require a Ksav Ashuris. The only difference is as far as the Lashon is concerned. That with regard to Sfarim, you can have Lashonos that are not Lashon Ashuris, meaning they're not Lashon Kodesh. And yet if the Ksav is a Ksav Ashuris, the Sefer Torah is kosher. It's like, if I could give you an example, the Rambam wrote his commentary on the Mishnah in Arabic, but it's written in Ksav Ashuris. I saw it with my own eyes. You know, the Rambam's own writing. They had it on exhibit here in the library, in the main library. So what's the difference now between Sfarim on the one hand and Tefillin Mezuzah on the other hand? The difference is not in the Ksav. The Ksav itself is going to be a Ksav Ashuris, but rather in the Lashon. What language is being communicated here? And Tefillin and Mezuzah require Ashuris, which is the same as Lashon Kodesh. So that in the case of Tefillin and Mezuzah, both the Ksav and the Lashon are in Ashuris. Whereas in Sefer Torah, although the Ksav is in Ashuris, the Lashon can be any Lashon. And Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Af HaSfarim Lo Yitiru Sheyichtavu Ela B'Yavonis. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, and we're going to have to study his Shita, the only language that you're allowed to use, again, the Ksav is always the Ksav Ashuris, but the Lashon has to be Yevonis. If it's not going to be Lashon Ashuris, which means Lashon Kodesh, it's going to have to be Yevonis. It was very odd that Yevonis gets such a special status.
I mean, it makes sense that you'd limit the Tefillin and Mezuzahs and not the Sfarim, because Tefillin and Mezuzahs, nobody's actually reading.
Right, right. This is all based on different limudim and derivations. Now, just read before we go one line in the Gemara. Again, in every Ein Bein, we always figure out what's common to the two, because you're saying the only difference is the Ksav has to be, whether the Ksav has to be Ashuris or not. Halatofron, Begidin, Ulitamis Yadayim, Zevezesh Shovin. It means that this halacha, that tefira could not be with rope, but the stitching has to be with gidin, which means gidin of a beim tahora, and the halacha that if you touch these svarim, or for that matter the klaf of mezuzah, you contract a tumas yadayim, which means if you subsequently touch Truma, you pass all the Truma, you metame the Truma. Here there's no difference between the Sefer Torah, the Tefillin, and the Mezuzah. So this Gemara we're going to pick up in Mirtz Hashem next week. And at this point we really could say that we're almost ready to turn the Daf Tesamon out. So let me take this opportunity to wish everyone a great Shabbos. And the reconciliation of Father and Yosef and the brothers should be an impetus for us to have Shalom Al Yisrael.
Okay. I have a question.
Yeah.
The whole issue of Ashuris and the text, the script. What was the Torah given on Har Sinai in? Because if the Ashuris was given...
Right, that's complicated.
In Babel,
Right, that's complicated. I don't know. I may be able to research it over the weekend if I can. As I prepare for the next year, but... I can't give you an answer, I'll regalachas, that's for sure.
And would a Sefer Torah...
Do we have to do
the ancient script be valid?